Healthy Alternatives. Both research and real-life experiences are making it clear every day that our traditional medical system and practices need to be rethought, revised, and recharged in light of a more holistic approach to health. Dr. Jerry V. Teplitz, host of Healthy Alternatives, has been a pioneer for 36 years in stress management and optimum health. With a Ph.D. in holistic health sciences, a law degree, and as the author of 8 books, all focused on health, stress management, and performance, Dr. Teplitz is uniquely qualified to help us explore and incorporate healthy alternatives into our daily lives. He is a professional speaker and has shared his wisdom with over 1 million people. Join him to reach your highest level of health and wellness. Now, here's Dr. Teplitz.
Welcome to Healthy Alternatives. I'm Dr. Jerry Teplitz. What Healthy Alternatives is about is most of us really want to live to optimum levels of health, optimum levels of wellness. We want to feel better, live longer, and enjoy life even more. And that's what I attempt to bring you in each of the shows I do each week on Healthy Alternatives. A little later, I'll be introduced to my guest, Dr. Julie Chen. She's an integrative medicine physician. She's board certified in internal medicine and also fellowship trained and board certified in integrative medicine. She's an expert that's appeared on radio, TV, newspaper, magazine interviews, and she uses integrative alternative areas in her practice. She's been on my show before. I'm going to be talking to her again in just a few minutes. Every week, I like to begin the show by talking about an issue or a concern you should know about because it can have a real impact on you. What I want to talk about is excess fructose that you're taking in potentially into your body and that it's toxic. Now, every cell in your body can directly use glucose. However, fructose, and especially also in the form of high fructose corn sweetener, is primarily metabolized in your liver, and it can serve as a way of increasing cancer growth. A recent article, An Expert Opinion on Therapeutic Targets, reviewed the relationship between refined sugars and cancer risks. What they found is cancer cells readily utilize fructose to support proliferation and preferentially use fructose for nucleus acid synthesis. What this means is fructose is promoting cancer growth by altering cellular metabolism, increasing free radical oxygen molecules in your body, causing DNA damage, and causing insulation. A study published in Cancer Research found that different sugars are metabolized in the body in different ways, and that what they found is that sugar feeds cancer because they found the tumor cells thrive on sugar. However, fructose aids in cell division, speeding up the growth and spread of cancer. The major problem in this country is Americans are consuming fructose at levels 300 to 600% beyond the upper limits. It means we're drinking soda, we're eating desserts, we're having pizza, we're having alcohol beverages, pasta, all kinds of things that have high fructose corn sweetener in them. If you have cancer, you want to actually getting your total fructose level, including fruits, down to below 10 grams of sugar a day. See, carbohydrates from sugar and sucrose, what these do is they decrease the ability of a type of white blood cell that envelop and destroy invaders such as cancer. So even though this notion of sugar feeds cancer is about 80 years old, most conventional cancer programs don't really address this and don't talk about avoiding sugars and fructose if you have cancer. And now you'll be seeing advertisements saying you can have corn sugar, and that is an ad put out by the folks who make high fructose corn sweetener. They've renamed it. They haven't done anything else, and they say it's the same as regular sugar. Guess what? It ain't. having that high fructose corn sweetener, and especially the amounts that we're eating it, potentially is causing a cancer epidemic out there. If you want to know more about me, Dr. Jerry Teplitz, you can go to teplitz.com, and you can follow me on Twitter and Facebook. At the top of the Healthy Alternatives page, you'll see Jerry Recommends. Those are people, services, products that I recommend that can be really helpful for you. You might want to take a look at what I've got there. Every week, I like to talk to you about a healthy breakthrough. It's the newest discoveries, latest information about healthy alternatives you can use for yourself, your family, and loved ones. What I want to talk about is getting away from GMO foods, genetically modified organisms and foods, and looking back at using regular crossbreeding pollination as a way of really helping us. There's a fellow by the name of Haworth Boyes. He has started Harvest Plus with the intention of bringing nutrient-rich crops to tens of thousands of African farmers by using conventional breeding. His passion for this developed in the 1980s, and he realized that like 65% of African and East Asian children have iron deficiencies that can lead to anemia and fatigue, vitamin D deficiencies that produce 500,000 annual cases of blindness, and lack of zinc in the diet also kills 800,000 a year. So he began to explore the idea of taking native plants and in the region and mating them with similar varieties that have desired traits. An example would be an African sweet potato. He found a North American variety that is high in vitamin A, and by developing it, he's developed an African sweet potato that is more nutritious in vitamin A. To give an example, after a dozen times of doing selective breeding, he produced a cassava plant for Central African farmers that could survive in the soil and climate of the region. It had a flowery, dry taste that the farmers were used to, but it also packed a hidden nutritional punch of vitamin D. They've been doing the same thing to create high iron varieties of beans and pearl millet, rice and wheat that's rich in zinc, and sweet potatoes fortified with vitamin A. In Mozambique and Uganda, they actually did a study of this sweet potato, and they found that 24,000 households, women and young children, almost doubled their daily vitamin A intake. Doing conventional breeding is much, much safer than doing GMO modification of plants and not creating all the chaos and the super weeds and chemicals and all of that that are impacting us. And so this is really a healthy alternative. Before I introduce my guest, Dr. Julie Chen, I'd like to pause for this message.
Every one of us is under stress from work, family, the economy, layoffs, the inability to retire. These are the realities today. Even if you're doing okay, we all have friends and relatives experiencing hard times. Hey, just watching the news can make you nervous. Make no mistake, there's nothing benign about stress. It can lead to high blood pressure, digestive problems, difficulty concentrating, and increased risk of disease. That's why Dr. Jerry Teplitz wrote the book Managing Your Stress in Difficult Times, Succeeding in Times of Change. He presents easy, effective techniques to reduce stress, eliminate pain, relieve insomnia, and gain an overall sense of well-being. Managing Your Stress is fully illustrated and provides hands-on, proven methods you can use immediately. Dr. Teplitz knows how to cut to the chase. He begins working with you from the very first page of Managing Your Stress in Difficult Times, Succeeding in Times of Change. Click on the cover that you see on the WebTalkRadio.net page in front of you and buy it now. It comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee, and it will change your life.
My guest today is Dr. Julie Chen. Dr. Julie is an integrative medicine physician. She's board certified in internal medicine and also fellowship trained and board certified in integrative medicine.
She has her own medical practice in San Jose, California. She's medical director of corporate wellness for several Silicon Valley-based corporations. She's a columnist for several national magazines. She's been featured on radio and TV, newspaper, magazine interviews. She's been on Healthy Alternatives before. And within her practice, she focuses on many types of healing modalities, including medical acupuncture, Chinese scalp acupuncture, clinical hypnotherapy, and many, many, many more. And so, Dr. Julie, welcome to Healthy Alternatives for the second time.
Thank you for having me back.
So let me ask you a question. There's a concern that folks have as they age in that they lose hair. What's some of the reasons that you've run across as to why hair loss is happening?
You know, I think one of the first things to think about when you're losing hair, especially if it's kind of losing hair throughout the head and not just in certain areas like the male pattern baldness, but rather throughout the head, that kind of stuff you want to be checking for: thyroid issues, anemia, which is low red blood cell counts, iron deficiency, etc. You want to be looking at nutritional deficiencies, a lot of the B vitamins, the omegas, even the healthy fats, etc., amino acids, things like that are all really important. So a lot of the common things that I screen for initially are things like autoimmune diseases, thyroid diseases, anemia, and then, you know, potentially like infections, blood count issues, cancers. We're looking for things like nutritional deficiencies and things like that. But if you start to get things where it's more hair loss is in a specific spot, first things first is I would see a dermatologist to make sure that, you know, things like alopecia areata or things like that that are different from male pattern baldness isn't occurring. And then if it is male-patterned baldness, then there's other things that we can talk about for that.
Now, you mentioned a number of different nutritional approaches. A quote-unquote traditional doctor, as opposed to you, who's looking much broader, where would they go with the notions of attempting to do something about hair loss?
You know, I think the thing that's first very important is to really rule out for those diseases. Because a lot of times people will just think, well, I'm losing hair, it must be nutritional. And then sometimes it's actually underlying issues of thyroid disease, autoimmune disease, et cetera. So don't overlook other symptoms that go along with the hair loss. For example, a lot of times when patients come in to talk to me about hair loss, I'll ask them whether they have joint issues or they stiff in the morning for autoimmune kind of rheumatoid arthritis, lupus type stuff. And then I'll ask about thyroid stuff. Are you sluggish? Are you gaining weight? Or are you maybe hyperthyroid? Were your palpitations, anxious, having trouble sleeping, sweaty, et cetera? Things like that also need to be addressed. And then asking about blood loss, are you seeing blood in the stool, you know, things like that. So you want to be asking for, in medicine, what we call review of systems, which is looking for associated symptoms that may be concerning that goes along with the hair loss, and not just think of hair loss as just hair loss. But let's say, you know, those medical issues, I think, first and foremost, should be ruled out. And if those are ruled out and there are nutritional deficiencies, one main thing that's very, very important is to understand that patient's nutritional intake on a day-to-day. A lot of times doctors will just say, hey, you know what, let's put you on a multivitamin, let's put you on a protein shake, et cetera. And the real problem is that they eat junk food all day long and they aren't getting any nutrients, right? So first and foremost, you got to change the underlying baseline of what they're eating so that they're actually getting the foods into the body that they need, because our body's a machine and so is our hair follicles, and we need nutrients for it to grow well. So start first with looking at that person's nutritional intake throughout any given day. Then from that point on, if they're eating well already, they may not be absorbing everything that they're eating, because what we put in our mouth isn't automatically getting all absorbed. So then you want to talk about supplementation at that point.
It isn't getting absorbed except for maybe around the stomach area with the fat balance for a lot of folks. Now, do inflammatory chemicals and reactions in the body have a role in hair loss at all?
Absolutely. And that's the thing is that, you know, a lot of these patients who have autoimmune diseases, inflammatory diseases where hair loss becomes more of an issue with them, it's because the body's more inflamed. And inflammation, and what's interesting is recent studies have looked at role of what we call prostaglandins, a lot of these inflammatory chemicals. There are levels of variations of regulation from a lot of the hormones and chemicals in our body, including inflammatory chemicals, that do affect our hair production and hair growth. So my main goal, and I try to keep it simple for my patients, the main thing to keep in mind is chronic inflammation isn't something that we want in our bodies. And so what we want is for the body to be as uninflamed and healthy as possible. And aside from the hair loss issue, this is true of all many, many diseases, whether it be cancer, heart disease, diabetes, autoimmune diseases, eczema, psoriasis, even skin issues, et cetera. So when we're looking at inflammation, you want to try to eat anti-inflammatory and create an environment for your body that's anti-inflammatory, not just for the hair, but for your whole body. Because one thing that people tend to think is hair loss is just hair loss, but hair loss is a reflection of your overall health. Just like when patients have eczema or acne or psoriasis, it's not just the eczema, acne, and psoriasis. It's a reflection of your overall health. So you want to take a more kind of comprehensive whole body approach to decreasing inflammation and improving nutrient for overall hair, skin, you know, nails, et cetera.
Just so you're aware, I have been using a product called Nioxone. Mm-hmm. And I was, you know, losing hair towards the top rear of the head. Mm-hmm. And what I found is over time it actually reduced the hole appearing way down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Have you found that, have you used anything like that with patients?
Well, so here's the thing, is it depends on the severity of the hair loss. And what's interesting is that sometimes, this is actually something I forgot to mention before, but I think is very important potentially for your listeners to know. I have had patients where then when they switch their hair shampoo and conditioner over to ones that are more organic and sulfate-free, the hair loss will stop. So one thing that's important isn't just thinking about what we're not getting enough of, but potentially taking away things that are harming the hair follicles and your scalp and your hair growth. Like a lot of the chemical stuff sometimes can be so irritating on the scalp that it actually worsens hair loss. So things like Nioxone, there's also other various different types of hair loss shampoos, conditioners, topical scalp stuff. Like, for example, I believe Aveda has one that has like turmeric in there. There's some studies that suggest potentially turmeric, which is a spice, could be helpful with hair loss. But, you know, all of those things are well and good in the sense that if it's helping a little bit, I'm not opposed to that. But I still think people should focus on the kind of getting the follicles to be healthy from the inside out. And then the topical stuff is helpful. I mean, obviously there's things like Rogaine and things like that that are the minoxidil, FDA approved, et cetera, for hair loss. Those things are something that, you know, again, are potentially useful.
Let's change focus for a little bit and talk about aspirin, because there's you know, should you be taking it for certain things? Are there dangers for taking it? So I think there's a lot of confusion out there for folks.
Yeah.
Can you share what kind of you view as the truth of the myths of what we should be doing with aspirin?
So here's the thing, is there's a couple studies that came out before that initially said, okay, well, you know, aspirin, as we know, potentially helpful for preventing heart disease, strokes, thinning the blood so that you're not as likely to get blood clots in the heart and the brain. But then another study came out saying, well, you know, the people who are healthy and you're using a low-dose aspirin to prevent a heart attack and a stroke, they're actually a higher risk for bleeding. So now you're putting these otherwise potentially healthy people who are trying to prevent heart disease and strokes and putting them at higher risk for bleeding and having, you know, hemorrhages, et cetera, in their brains, et cetera. So then another study came out and said, well, you know, but it's really helpful even for cancer prevention, especially things like esophageal cancers, colon cancers, et cetera. So my take away point per se on all these studies is you really want to look at the person that you're deciding the aspirin therapy for. Is this person perhaps, you know, their entire family history, everyone's got some sort of, you know, GI cancer or gastrointestinal cancer types, or they've got massive cancer history, and this person doesn't have any history of bleeding issues, et cetera, they're relatively young. I would still say, because of the evidence, that it's potentially helpful to put someone like that on a low-dose aspirin for prevention. But, you know, for someone, let's say, who's got, and for someone who's got, you know, really significant family history or personal history of heart disease and strokes, clearly aspirin has been seen to be helpful. But if you're talking about someone where they're, you know, just the general public, don't have any family history of either heart disease or strokes, and they don't have a history of significant cancers in the family, and they eat extremely well and they're otherwise healthy, do they absolutely need to be on an aspirin? Perhaps not, you know. So I think what's the most important takeaway point from these studies, as with any study, is first and foremost, don't just listen to what's being said in the media. Read the actual primary articles themselves to look at what patient population they're really looking at. And then above and beyond that, if you're not sure, ask your doctor because they'll know. And bring in maybe the article to the doctor so that they can read it with you. And then the other thing is to look at the patient, because if the person himself or herself falls into a different category, the answer as to whether you should take aspirin or not is a different answer.
So before we continue, I'd like to remind you, you're listening to Healthy Alternatives with Dr. Jerry Teplitz, and we'll be back with my guest, Dr. Julie Chen, in just a moment.
Improve your golf game today. It's absolutely possible using the DVD Par and Beyond, Secrets to Better Golf, from stress management coach Dr. Jerry Teplitz. Par and Beyond is a revolutionary new concept that yields immediate results. You'll experience the difference the very next time you play. Even the golf pros love this method. Randy Taylor hadn't placed in a tournament for 8 years, but just 1 week after taking this seminar, he came in second. It's not just in your swing, it's in your head. That's why TNI Golf Magazine calls Dr. Teplitz a headmaster. Par and Beyond, Secrets to Better Golf is available on DVD. You can get it by clicking on the Par and Beyond cover on the WebTalkRadio.net screen in front of you. You'll learn new, powerful techniques that will instantly improve your game, whether you're a pro or a duffer. This is your new secret to success on the course. It's a totally different approach, and it comes with a 60-day money-back guarantee. And don't tell your golf buddies. You're about to become a winner.
So my guest today is Dr. Julie Chen. She is an integrative medicine physician. She's board certified in internal medicine and she's also fellowship trained and board certified in integrative medicine. She has her own medical practice in San Jose, California. She is medical director of corporate wellness at several Silicon Valley-based corporations. She's a columnist, been on radio, TV, magazine interviews, the whole gambit. And she really brings together a whole range of alternative healing modalities into her medical practice. And so, Dr. Julie, what I wanted to talk about now was the notion of men and their libido. And are there foods that can help men with that? And I assume when we're talking about libido, are we talking about just testosterone, or are there other elements that are going on with that as well?
Well, definitely there's other elements associated with a healthy sex drive. Testosterone is important. DHT, which is another form of androgen or male hormonal system. Adrenal functioning, the organs above our kidneys, as well as the sex organs, are all kind of involved. And what's interesting is when you talk about healthy libido, it's not just the hormonal system, but it's also our brain and our mood, right? So all of those kind of come into play for a healthy libido. And I would say usually when patients come in and talk to me about the issue of low sex drive or low libido, one of the main first things that we do is we look at their medication list, because a lot of medications can suppress sex drive. So and then we talk about whether the sex drive is a problem in certain situations but not in others, because when it's situational, it probably is more of a reflection of a psychosocial interaction, environmental interaction between that person and their partner. And then in other situations, it's totally fine. So, you know, first we have to kind of tease out whether it's more of a environmental, psychosocial involvement, whether it has anything to do with medications, kind of outside exogenous factors are kind of looked at first. And then, you know, if all those things are fine and this is a low libido across the board, no matter with who or in any situation, then we start to look at, are your hormone levels normal? How's your mood, et cetera? And then there are some natural ways to help with a healthy libido, obviously, which is, and not just food, but environmental, right? When we don't get enough sleep, your libido is much lower. Exercise helps with blood flow, good vascular functioning to help with a good healthy sex drive and sexual functioning. And then some of the things that we get in our foods, because a lot of people, if you're eating a lot of junk food, you're not quite getting the you know, minerals, vitamins that you need for a healthy sex drive. And smoking actually is something that, and alcohol really affects sex drive as well.
Are there specific vitamins and minerals that are more helpful than others in terms of creating a healthy libido?
Sure. I really am a big fan of having patients eat anti-inflammatory. Again, it's because it's healthy, you know, vasculature, and you get your wide gamut of nutrients without having to put too much thought into it. But, you know, nuts, fish. So a lot of the nuts, you have your selenium, your magnesium, zinc, vitamin E. All of those are important for healthy hormonal functioning and vascular functioning. Things like for the vegetables and whatnot, we look at a lot of the colored vegetables for the carotenes and a lot of the green vegetables, again, because you get a lot of the minerals like the magnesiums and calciums in the vegetables themselves, but you also get a lot of the vitamins like the B vitamins, E vitamins, et cetera, to help with vasculature and hormonal functioning. And then, of course, healthy fats like the omegas, those are really important as well. So a lot of those wide gamuts, which is why I usually say as a blanket comment to patients who are looking for disease treatment or low libido treatment, et cetera, I like to stick within that realm of that anti-inflammatory diet because a lot of the things that I just mentioned are very much within the realm of an anti-inflammatory diet. So it's one of those, it's almost, I joke with my patients, it's almost like a cure-all in the sense that from a natural standpoint, when you eat an anti-inflammatory diet, you take the guesswork out of finding the nutrients that you need for normal, healthy functioning, whether it's sex drive, heart function, organ, you know, endocrine, your thyroid, hormonal function, et cetera. And what's interesting is that all of that is tied together with healthy libido, because if your thyroid's not functioning well, your hormone's not functioning well, your libido isn't going to be great. So I definitely say more of an anti-inflammatory diet in the sense that if you were to just look at that and eat more of a plant-based, healthy fats, nuts, et cetera, type diet, you're naturally getting the wide gamut of the nutrients that you need for a healthy libido.
In a way, you're almost talking about being vegetarian to some degree. And so are there ways that a vegetarian man could then use these plant-based foods and proteins to help them actually gain muscle mass if they want to bulk up some?
Absolutely. And the thing is that, you know, a lot of patients, when they say, you know, if I eat more of a plant-based diet, how can I get enough amino acids? I mean, granted, it's definitely a lot harder. You want to be looking at, again, like things that are protein-based, like nuts, legumes, a lot of the beans, a lot of the like things like quinoa. All of those have higher levels of proteins in them. And sometimes if you're not a vegetarian, like not a pure vegetarian, and you're more of a pesca, lacto, ovo vegetarian, like the fish, lacto is dairy and an ovo is egg. If you're eating all of that, you're usually pretty good, if you, especially if you are mindful about eating legumes and nuts and some of the more protein-based grains as well. So, but if you're not eating any of those and you're a pure vegetarian vegan, then obviously sticking more to the legumes and the nuts and the higher protein-based grains are important. But one other thing is that, you know, I definitely say for my vegetarian male patients who want to make sure they're getting enough protein in their system, or if they're having a hard time absorbing and breaking down the proteins, and we're seeing that based on increased muscular pain, difficulty with recovery, et cetera, and their magnesium levels and all that stuff from their absorption looks low despite eating a lot, then what I may end up doing is putting them on supplementation. And a lot of times I'll put these patients not just on protein shakes, because the protein in there is potentially still larger forms of a protein. I put them on potentially free-form amino acids, which are almost like pre-digested amino acids, so that it's easier to absorb and make sure that they're getting a wider gamut into their system.
Is that something somebody can get over the counter? Do you need a prescription for this?
Oh, no, you can definitely get over the counter. But what I would recommend is that when someone's trying to put together a supplemental regimen system, that they do talk to a physician about it, because there are certain people where high levels of protein aren't such a good idea. For example, if you are someone with renal or kidney disease patient and you have kidney issues, high levels of protein isn't necessarily a good thing. So it's a little bit of a harder strain on the kidney. So I would just say if you're looking to get, you know, free-form amino acids, et cetera, talk to your physician first to make sure you're getting the right kind, that you're getting the amount that is still going to be safe for your body and not overdo it. Because I do have patients where they go buy over-the-counter and then they decide, oh, well, if a quarter teaspoon is great for the free-form amino acids, 2 tablespoons must be awesome, you know. So that's not always the case, and so I would definitely say, because everything over-the-counter isn't always safe, to just clear that with your physician first.
Now, are there supplements and vitamins men need to be careful about taking?
Yeah, I think, you know, so for example, there are certain things. This is an interesting story. One of my patients was taking a hair loss supplement.
And we're back to hair loss, cool.
Yes, we're coming full circle now. And he didn't know that there was saw palmetto in there, which actually is used a lot with, like, enlarged prostates because it helps to block part of the kind of DHT or hormonal system, the male hormonal system. And so he was actually indirectly affecting his hormonal state. And that's what's interesting is because, you know, he didn't even know that that was in there. And that's why I'm saying they need to definitely clear it with their physician. And then there's other things where patients will take a lot of a different supplement and they won't know that there's a lot of soy in there or isoflavones, et cetera. And then all of a sudden they're also taking saw palmetto. And then now you've got a double dose where you're trying to almost increase the estrogen level in your body per se, because when you start to block things like the DHT, which is a different kind of hormone in the body, but it is still a male hormone, and the same category as kind of like testosterone for the layman's terms, but then you potentially can have a shunting of the hormonal system into a little bit higher level of estrogen in men. And so there's a lot more to it than just, you know, oh, it's a supplement over the counter, or it's safe. So I would just, and what's difficult to do over just a radio show is to talk about all the gamuts of things that potentially can affect your system. And because, again, that's dependent on your prior medical history, because someone with thyroid issues may have different concerns versus someone who's got testosterone issues, et cetera. And so what I usually say to everyone, just so that it's a little bit easier for people to remember, is if you're going to start a new supplement, whether you think it's benign, it's just for your skin, it's just for your hair, et cetera, just clear it with your physician, because there are things in there that you may not be aware of what it's doing because it's indirectly doing it. And so that's something that just, I think, as a general caveat, takeaway point, again, is to really clear all supplements with your physicians, because I know a lot of my patients love to say they don't need to know that. But in reality, they kind of do, and it's important for me to always remind my patients that start to see supplements almost like medicine, in the sense that they can be just as helpful sometimes. So in another way, it can also be just as disruptive to your system if your goal isn't to do, you know, one thing, then, and you don't know that that thing's actually doing that. So it's just best to clear it with your physician.
Now, since a lot of physicians have had minimal training in the nutritional side of it, mm-hmm. is there a way somebody can find somebody who is more of an integrative approach, like yourself, because, you know, you can tell your doctor, but if they don't have a background or training in nutrients and things like that mm-hmm. we're talking about, they may just poo-poo the whole thing and say you don't need it without really
exactly.
understanding what's going on. So is there
that does actually happen quite a lot, and I'm glad you brought up that point. It really does happen quite a bit. And I would say for general listeners, the ones that, if let's say there are no integrative physician or practitioners in the area, because you could start with just going on the internet and looking for integrative physician, but it's important to say integrative physician instead of integrative practitioner, because that's a very broad term, and you can pull up all kinds of different types of what they call themselves as integrative practitioner. So if you're looking for an integrative physician that can understand your medical history and take that into consideration with all the minerals and the vitamins and herbs, look for an integrative physician online. The other thing is a naturopath is also someone that is a good alternative to go to look for this kind of whether to find out whether your supplements are going to be safe or not based on your medical history. They have a bit more training in that. They learn a lot about medical conditions as well. What I would do is, there are a couple national associations. There's like American Holistic Associations out there. So, for example, you have the American Board of Integrative and Holistic Medicine that you can look up. And there's also American Board of Holistic Medicine. things like that. So I would take a look at some of the national associations and see if there are practitioners in the area that you can contact.
So for those who would like to find out more about Dr. Julie, what she does, and the things she's got available to help you, you can go to her website at makinghealthyeasy.com, and easy is E-Z. So it's www.makinghealthyeasy.com. Dr. Julie, thanks for being a guest again on Healthy Alternatives.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Next week, my guest is going to be Ivy Larson. She is a holistic, healthy lifestyle coach. Ivy is certified by the American College of Sports Medicine as a health fitness specialist. She's founder of CleanCuisine.com and author of the bestseller Gold Coast Cure. She's written a number of other books. Her latest book, which will be published next year, is Clean Cuisine, and she's really been focusing on holistic nutrition since 1998 because she was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. Ivy remains symptom-free for over a decade. She attributes her good health today to a clean, healthy lifestyle. We're going to talk both about Ivy's story and how clean cuisine and what she recommends can really help you in your life. You're not going to want to miss this one. This is Dr. Jerry Teplitz. You can find out more about me at teplitz.com, or you can follow me on Facebook and Twitter. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for being with us today for Healthy Alternatives. For more information about Dr. Teplitz and his availability for speaking engagements, please click on the globe on the webtalkradio.net page in front of you, or go to teplitz.com. You may also follow him on Facebook and Twitter by using the icons on the page. To find out more about his books, please click on any of the book covers you see. Eat well, rest well, take a breath, get some exercise, and we'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Healthy Alternatives.